Hey, everybody. My name is Damara West, and I'm founder of Be Well, Beautiful Woman, where we help women center their healing and liberation so that they can lead and live on their own terms. And I am overjoyed about welcoming you into the Abundance Summit, which is all about amplifying your power to draw in more money, more joy, and more ease. And Jovian Zane, you are in for a treat. Like, she is going to get ready to inspire us in all kinds of ways. But let me tell you about this queen before we get into the talk. Jovian Zane is a celebrated international speaker, a certified leadership coach, an expert facilitator who deeply transforms the lives of others through her inspiring and grounded approach to living and leading a purpose and values-driven life. With nearly 20 years of experience developing thousands of values-driven leaders, she continues to shape the culture and leadership of the world's most innovative organizations as the CEO of the On Purpose Movement. Her firm's client list includes Google, IDEO, Spotify, The New York Times, Meta, Goldman Sachs, Viacom, the Clinton Foundation, and Harvard University. And if that's not enough, she's working on her first book, which we're going to get into a little bit later. Jovian, I am so glad that you are with me, my sister.
Ooh, Damara West, I'm so glad to be with you too. Thank you for having me.
Yes, and we are twinsies today. We did not plan this, y'all.
We didn't. But
that's just how alignment works, right? So I'm so glad about this conversation. All right, so let's dive right in.
Let's do it.
So the first thing that I want to know is about your path to healing and standing in your power. So talk to us about what that path has entailed.
Gosh, well, you know, that question makes me think about what I've worked to be healed from, or what am I actively going towards? And when I think about future Jovian, or like Tara Moore talks in her book about this idea of having an inner mentor. So that inner mentor of that person years from now that speaks to who you are. When I think of who she is, she's the one who tells me that I am fully confident in my being, my purpose, my sense of self, that what I am able to contribute to the world is not predicated on what I do, but just who I am. And so I think about her as like a very healed version of myself. And if I think about my path to that healing, what is leading me to that future self, that inner mentor that could speak to me, the things that I'm actively continually working to make sure I'm healing from are the scars that remain from being in toxic work environments where I was one of only 7 women on a team of nearly 300, or when I was the only Black woman to ever have my job. The many times that I have been the first or the only in a room. And I think that we talk about, yeah, that's something to celebrate in a lot of ways when you're creating the path for others to go down when you're trailblazing. But there is often a cost that comes with trailblazing as well, whether that is, if you think about it, like your feet having to go through to create the spaces in snow, your feet are going to get more wet when you're the first foot to go down. Like, you are creating what other people will follow. So as the first woman on my team back in the day when I used to work for Black & Decker, the only woman on my team at the time, I remember having to raise my hand more often to be seen. I remember having to figure out how I was going to negotiate around a table full of men, and men that did not look like me, who frankly made it clear they didn't want me to be there. And so I had to work on grounding my confidence even more deeply in, Jovian, this isn't about just the sales that you can bring to the table, because of course you can do that, but they may not always want to see or recognize that, but are you going to be proud of who you are in the midst of this? Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to battle imposter thoughts, or I honestly think imposter thoughts are going to, if they're coming from a systemic oppression, that's not just on me work to do, but that's part of the work to do is how do I still show up confidently in that space? So a part of my healing has looked like being with a therapist, It's being with executive coaches. It's looked like journaling. It's looked like an intentional wellness practice. So it's being really clear on what does it mean to come back from being in toxic work environments that didn't want to see me, that didn't want to celebrate my contributions, that didn't want to honor who I am. I've had to do the work of collectively making sure I've got my wellness tribe and my wellness practices to continually help me to forge new paths. And also, if I'm following in the path of somebody else, how do I stand tall in that too?
Yeah. Well, you know, and it's difficult to be ourselves, right? In general, just being in this Black body, being a woman and
totally
whatever else is in the background of our lives, right? But being in the environments that you just described and still being able to center self and show up in spite of all of the messaging that said that you're not welcome, we don't value you, your voice is actually not important, make decisions probably a lot of times without trying to make decisions without you. But now, you know, all these years later, you've built this amazing brand where you're working with some of the largest companies in the world, right? So what does that feel like, knowing that you applied all of these practices and it's gotten you to this point in your life and you're thriving, right? You're living an abundant life. What does that feel like to know that it could have been different?
Yeah, it feels like, I think I feel like a beautiful mixture of pride, like a healthy kind of pride, and knowing that this is earned. Like where I sit now is earned.
Yes. Yes.
Period. I worked really hard for this to be life. Mm-hmm. It's that. And it's also an enormous amount of gratitude.
Yeah.
And humility that sits in knowing, as you said, it could all be different. Like I don't even know if I ascribe anymore to this idea of favor, because then it makes me think, well, who's not favored and why? And I can think of some of the most incredible people that I've known have to go through battles that I haven't faced. Physical battles, disease, mental illness that comes out of nowhere. And we didn't grow up differently. And I would think, you know, on paper, man, they're a better person than I am. God, why is that their, like, why is that their plight? And so I sit right now, yeah, with lots of gratitude and lots of pride in knowing I did work hard to be here. But more than ever, my gratitude eclipses any pride I have in myself, because I know that I didn't get here by myself either. Right. Mm-hmm. So for me, I'm spiritually grounded. I talk to my creator all the time. So this journey that we've been on, I'm grateful for that. And then I'm also grateful for what I would call, as Maya Angelou would speak to, like the 10,000 that are with me. You know, like when you think about the brand you built to, Damara, you didn't do this by yourself.
Yeah.
And like I always say, you can't be your best self by yourself. And so when I sit now and thinking, man, I've had the On Purpose movement for, it'll be 10 years before I know it. And we've been working with some of the companies that you mentioned and many more. It's like, how did we get here?
Mm.
We've worked really hard, but we've also been accompanied by incredible people. I have incredible partners and mentors like Carla Harris, like Tiffany Dufu, like Fatima Burnham Watkins. Like, I mean, just so many others who've helped me to negotiate my way to now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm definitely sitting in an answered prayer, and that happens every moment and every second.
So there's a couple of things that I just want to reflect back, right, along these themes, this theme of abundance. And, you know, you said it, and I never heard the 10,000, even though I followed, and, you know, Dr. Maya Angelou's work for a really long time. And I quote her more than any other person.
Oh, same.
In the world, right? In the world.
Yes.
And if I actually have a portrait of her over here. It should be right here. I might move my art around a little bit. I might have to have
I love it.
You know, but you just talked about gratitude, right? And gratitude is one of the easiest practices that allows us to really prime our mind to be present with self and to be a reservoir for attracting good things, right? So the fact that you said it numerous times and really embody it, and I imagine that that's an ongoing practice of yours, right? That's one of the secrets to living an abundant life of flow. Okay, so we know that women often struggle with owning their power, right? I mean, we've been socialized from day one to care for everyone and everything else, and we are often last on the to-do list. So how can we tap into that inherent power that all of us are essentially born with?
Yeah, I think it's so many things, but one, I guess, approach into that I would consider, and I'm sitting now in my seat as like, and part of my identity as a mother, and I'm thinking intentionally about what do I try to show my daughter, Georgie? And it's that I want her to grow up because I am such a key part of how she socialized, what she understands, where she places value, what she sees as important in the world, etc. I want to help redefine what power looks and feels like and what value she should place on different things that the world, I know externally, would say is not important. So for instance, you know, in business or corporate spaces, for so long, they've deemed skills like emotional intelligence or communication or team morale or all of those things as like soft skills. Mm-hmm. When that, in my opinion, at this point, and I would say expert thought, mm-hmm. is that was strategically done to clip women's wings, skills that we are socialized to have easily and more readily and are practiced in, to undermine our thinking in terms of their contribution to a space. Yeah. So we've been told that your ability to console a team member, to encourage them, to be able to have a difficult conversation is a soft skill. It's called a difficult conversation for a reason, because it's difficult. Yes. And it's all of those things I just described and so many others are around the culture work that makes an organization either just survive or thrive. Mm-hmm. And so I think part of the reason why, again, women for so long, and we perpetuate this, frankly, if we have not done our work to, you know, dismantle some of our own internalized oppressive behavior or thoughts, we can send messages to each other that we're receiving from the world. So like, as Dr. Beverly Tatum would talk about, it's like breathing in a smog and breathing it back out. We take in these ideas that what we have to offer to a space isn't worthy, that it's not meaningful. And so I am thinking again, as my daughter, I'm like, I want her to be able to see her leadership, her natural style of communicating as valuable. And as like, Georgie, that could be the archetype for leadership, or that can be a mode. Forget archetypes. Let's actually just be expansive. That's one way. But I want her to know that one way she could offer is valuable. And so I think part of our work is identifying in one another and in ourselves the things that actually are making relationships better, that make teams better. And even if the people in power, situational or positional power, aren't readily noticing it, if you know that what you just did made a difference, note it, write it down, communicate it. I do think it's part of like our work to advocate for it. And I'm not going to say it's easy. It's part of my own work I know I've been having to do for a long time, but I do think it's necessary.
Yeah.
We have to be co-conspirators in shifting the culture in that way. While we're pushing the systems to change at a systems wide level, individually, let's think about what our own practices could be to help contribute. It's not one or the other. It's both and.
You just gave us something really, really keen to chew on. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that many people would not associate those soft skills.
Yeah.
Being labeled soft skills by design to keep women essentially in their place.
Yeah.
What
we know we want, what would men, right, would want our place to be underneath them. You're not asking for as much money if you don't think that what you're contributing to the team is as valuable. So again, you know, the separation and pay, right? Like, we could just keep going on the line of like home ownership. All of these things add up over time. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. And I love the invitation for us to think about the ways in which we've been socialized, because a lot of times we just take things on as if they're truth. Right. And we don't.
Yeah.
And I think that we have to oftentimes question, like, who said that that's the truth?
Oh, right? Yeah.
Where are the facts? Where's the data that supports this? Who says legally we can and cannot do this? And, you know, and the list goes on and on and on.
And who made that law, even if it is legal, right?
Thank you.
You're right. Like, who made that law? Why did they make that law?
Yes, yes. And there's an enormous amount of programming that we've got to undo as women in order to really center the power that we have and really take a moment to take stock of the ways in which we have allowed ourselves to take on false narratives about what is valuable and what's not in relationship to what is natural to us as women. And so that was really, really powerful, sis. So the next thing I want to talk about is just, you know, the reality is that many people do suffer with feeling down on themselves, right? And they question themselves, and particularly as they're leveling up and going into unfamiliar territory. So for individuals who are struggling with that, and in times when you've struggled with that yourself, how can we tap into this steadfast belief in who we are, and how do we push through the times when doubt manifests?
I so appreciate this question. And honestly, I'm thinking back to some words that my pastor gave to our congregation just this past Sunday. Shout out to Pastor Mike. but this idea, and this is in my own words now, but then I'll get to something he said. But when you said doubt, it made me think for myself recently when I've experienced like a flood of doubt, like, I don't know if I can do this or not. Like right now, you know, I'm working on this book, which we'll talk more about, but there are moments when I have what feels like crippling doubt. Like, I don't know if I can get this out. Like, I don't know if I have something to say, or if I have, if what I have to say matters enough. Is it really going to touch someone's heart? Is it going to do what I hope it does? And in moments when I do feel the doubt that would make me want to put my pen down or take my fingers off, I have found for me, it's best to acknowledge the truth of what I'm feeling, like in the moment. So what am I feeling? I'm feeling nervous that what I hope, like my intention, won't meet the impact. And every day I'm actually trying to make those two things converge. Like right now, I hope the intention of my heart, which is to encourage people to feel less alone in their journey, to feel like you're seen, you care, like someone cares about you and wants to encourage you to keep going, doing your best. I hope that's felt. It may not be, but the may not be shouldn't stop me from trying.
Yes.
Right. And if it doesn't work out, if I'm given another opportunity to try again, I should. Like that's some, like just hearing that and seeing that, I realize the person I want to be is the person who will still try again. I won't let the defeat of the moment, or like it wasn't 100%, or like this only touched one person versus 10. I don't ever want to be someone who thinks if it didn't touch the 10, the one person wasn't worth it, because the one person's always worth it. So that's where I think like the mixture of the faith comes in for me too, where it's like, I'll go back for the one, in the way that I feel like my faith is all, like, I feel like my creator always is thinking of me. I still want to have my eye towards people in that way, and towards whatever the goal is that I'm assigned to, it's worthy enough for me to keep trying for it. So I think that's one angle. And then I think the other angle I think about is this idea of, you know, doubt. How do you like undermine doubt? It's in some way with certainty. And certainty comes from experience. Now, you may never be in the exact same situation as you, like in this present moment, I may not be having the exact same one that I had before with another person that I was interviewing with. But what I do know is I've had other interviews and they've gone well and I've enjoyed them. And so with the doubt comes of like, Jovian, oh, I don't know if you're going to have anything to say to tomorrow. What if it doesn't go well? I got to tell myself, look at your own life as the testimony to give you enough currency to spend that confidence in this moment, to say, you've done this enough. Yeah. You've shown up enough to know it's still going to be good. Mm-hmm. It's still going to be worth the time. It's still going to be meaningful. You're capable. You're worthy of this. it's a good experience. So I would encourage people who are feeling whatever doubt in this moment to use your life as the living example of what's capable, even if it's not a one-to-one, because it probably won't be a one-to-one, but you still have some type of experience that can give you enough confidence to just show up for whatever the thing you're doubting. And if you feel like, man, Jovian, I hear you, but I don't have it, borrow it from somebody else. Yeah. I borrow confidence from other people, from people like Maya Angelou, from people like my mentors, from my homegirls, from my peers. And their journeys have inspired me to dig deeper in believing what's my own. Like, mm-hmm. I have friends who are New York Times bestselling authors four times over. Shout out to Lovey. Friends who are writing books alongside me. Shout out to Alencia and to Brittany and to so many others. Like, we're doing this together. So when I doubt, I also remember I'm not in it alone. Mm-hmm. And I will learn from my other friends and my sisters like Rahel and others.
Yeah. And not to mention, you're going to learn from whatever you execute, right?
There it is.
You know, so much of what you said it resonates with me, and I imagine the listeners as well. I'm finishing my first book called Me Too, A Therapist. Woo-hoo! Oh! Thank you. Thank you, my sister. Called The Therapist Journey to Heal and Liberation. Mm. As I'm rereading about my trauma, there's a lot coming up for me, right? And so, of course, all the questioning that you just talked about, but then also facing this, right? And pacing and saying, gosh, you know, can I actually do this? Do I have the emotional aptitude to do this? Is anybody actually going to care? Who's going to actually read this book? There are people that have gone through more things than I've gone through. Why is my story relevant? And you said it. Because when we feel driven to birth something in the world, when we feel passionate about something, when we feel purpose to do something, do it anyway. Mm-hmm. Do it afraid.
Yeah.
And in times when we don't have the blueprint, right? You said, gosh, if we had the blueprint and we've had a success, we can look back at those successes and we can look to our sisters and say, oh, they've had these successes. Of course I can have these successes too.
Yeah.
So close to me. They're in my proximity. But sometimes we're traversing down a pathway where we don't have any of that, right? We don't have the past success or the person in close proximity. And so this is where tapping into, as you said, that pause, right? That pause. What am I feeling? What's happening right now?
Mm-hmm.
Allowing ourselves to experiencing it and coming back over and over and mm-hmm. over again until it gets done.
Until it gets done. Yeah.
Until it gets done.
Man.
And the last thing I want to say really quickly is that, you know, when we're talking about abundance, mm-hmm. One of the things that's so important is for us not to have perfection at the forefront. And a lot of times when we have outcomes, what we want it to look like, it is a form of perfection. And we have to be so careful about latching too tightly onto mm-hmm. what we want it to look like so that we can get out of our own way and let God, universe, source, creator come in. Because a lot of times, even when we think a certain way in terms of mm-hmm. outcomes, there's actually way more in store for us than what we
can more.
Conjure up in our heads anyway, right?
You got it. You said it. Well, that's so true. There's just so much more.
Yes.
You are so right. Like, we idolize the destination and minimize the journey. And that's just what generally we do as humans. But that's why I also believe it does make it difficult when you're starting something new, or, you know, like a book or whatever it is, you're trying to get your degree. You just think about walking across that stage, but we just don't talk about enough that process. And how do you also idolize the journey? Like, what does it really mean? Like, that's the living of it all. Like, we've made success. Like, it doesn't mean anything unless you're successful, unless you've done the thing. No, this book process is still meaningful for me. You said, like, I would learn. I have learned more about myself, I would say, in the past year and a half than I think I have, I don't know, all of college. Like, I can't even, the amount of things that are coming forward for me by just saying yes to this assignment, like being committed to it, has unlocked lots of doors. lots of understanding that wouldn't have come up had I not said yes to it. So I think also remembering that we could celebrate what our initial yes does is important.
Love that. And I felt that on a very visceral level. So thank you.
Of course.
For giving us that additional nugget. That was so beautiful. So what advice do you give to someone who is struggling to find their why, right? This is a theme that has come up a lot over the years. And, you know, many people live their whole lives and not knowing what their why is. Mm-hmm. And so how can people really tap into that and latch onto it and not let it get lost in translation?
Yeah. This idea of the why, I do so much work around. And in this moment, what feels really present for me to offer to your audience as they think about living abundantly is to think about tapping into your why from the standpoint of legacy, like at the end of it for you. Whenever, if you were at a time when you could look back at your life, what do you want to be true? So I'm going to give people a few coaching questions. And I would encourage you to jot these down if you're listening, because if you answer these, I imagine they may help you get more clear on the kind of impact and the kind of being you'd want to have and you would want to be in the world. So that first question of, you know, this idea of like, what do I want to be true because I was here?
Yeah.
You know, because as you've said, which I appreciate so much, thinking about God, the creator, the source, universe. I think there's like our language is probably too small to even name what really is operating on our behalf. But that great spirit, as I will call it, thought you were worthy enough to be here. Right. So just think for a second as you're considering this why, that from your own understanding right now, what do you want to be true because you showed up? What's better? Like that just every time I answer that question, it reduces me in the most beautiful way. It wow. gets out a lot of frivolous things or just things that I think I should do because the world told me, or I should want because my friends have or whatever. But I'm just like, well, what feels genuine to me? You know, and Howard Thurman talked about that and this convocation address he gave to Spelman, and I think it was like 1980 or something, but like the sound of the genuine. Which like speaks to, in my mind, like the heartbeat that's just yours, that's just so genuine to who you are, to who you've always been, the most pure side of you. And so I would ask people that question, what do you want to be true because you're here? Like, what's better? Then this question of who would you most want to impact, like positively? And that could be a person or a community, but like in this season of your life, who do you feel like, man, I just really hope this person, this group is better, can see better, can do better, has more access, you know, because I think purpose is, and our why is also tied to community in some way, shape or form.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would ask people to be thinking about, you know, tactically, what skills, resources, experiences, tools do you have available that you could use? You know, are you a gifted storyteller? Is your experience as a project manager allow you to help take complex ideas and distill them down in ways that people can move forward? Whatever it is, it's not small. It's something meaningful. Mm-hmm. So I would just encourage people to be thinking about what things do I have to offer that would help me to positively impact a group? And then be thinking also, if you feel like things are stopping you, well, what behaviors should you begin to kind of change or shift in your life right now? Whether that's your eating, whether it's your health practices, relationships that need to change. Like I found for myself, at one point, like I used to, there's a story about like me becoming pre-diabetic and realizing like my food and the way that I was taking in the lack of nourishment really was impacting my ability to be on stage and to travel. So that was a part of me having to change that for my why.
Yeah.
But I also think about now in terms of like this book writing, which I know is a part of my why, I've had to be really intentional around the kind of people that I'm engaging with in this season of my life. And I am spending a lot of very purposeful time with people who pour into me because I'm pouring so much out. to where I know if I'm not learning, if I'm not sitting at the feet of people, whether it's like in person, virtually, or like through a book, that I'm not going to have anything to give. Like, you know, I want to give from an overflow. So those are things I would offer people who are like, how do I begin to think about my why? Think about those questions.
Such powerful questions. And I so appreciate where you ended us in this answer about the intention that you've set. Mm-hmm. And the permission that you've given yourself to have your needs be met tenaciously during the season in your life, because you know you need it. You're very clear that in order for me to do X, Y, and Z, X, Y, and Z being the book and along with other things in your life, that you have to have the right size support so that people, additional people are not pulling on you, right?
That's right.
And as someone who is an abundance thought leader and doing the kind of work that you do, I imagine that folks are pulling on you all the time, right? And it sounds like you put a very hard boundary up to say, like, no, this is what my life is going to look like right now, because I've got to protect it tenaciously. And and that's going to be seasonally, depending on where our lives are, right? And what
it is
that we're looking to birth. And you know, there was something that you said, and this is actually connected to the last exploration that I'd love to do with you before we talk about your book, is that, you know, community is everything. And you talked about it earlier in terms of like the people that inspire you and support you that are already a part of your sisterhood. And, you know, so oftentimes our connections aren't necessarily representative of the kind of lives that we want to create in connection with the purpose, and how we tap into that, as you so eloquently shared with us in those powerful questions. So how do we effectively find our people, our sisterhood?
Oh gosh, I know this question is so important, because again, at least in my mind, you can't be your best self by yourself. And I think community is tied to purpose. I think that we are meant to journey with others. Doesn't mean every season we won't be journeying alone in a certain area, but I do think life is better spent in community. I think finding other people it's such an interesting thing. I mean, truthfully, I think you attract in some ways the people that ultimately you'd hope to be in community with. Like, I do think the law of attraction shows up in that way. So it's almost like, you know, if you're warm, you're going to invite someone else warm. Like, people want to be around a warm spirit or an inviting spirit or a thoughtful person. And so, you know, like, I think just from a personal standpoint of thinking about like, what do I put off in the world? I think that's always something to think about. Like, I thought about that for myself when I've wanted to attract a different kind of mentor or a different kind of community or friends. I do try to be intentional, like, okay, Jovian, what's your energy like right now? Like, are you being thirsty? Are you being honest? Like, are you being forthright with the kind of people you want to be with? Like, just be truthful. Like, be truthful with what you want, like, and who you're hoping to be in community with. I feel like that matters from a real honest place. Two, I think tactically, man, I know it's tough and it depends on where you are in the world and, you know, your access perhaps to social media and to organizations. But I would say to one's ability, to the best of one's ability, I think tapping into communities that already exist, whether it's the YWCA, whether it's sororities, whether it's from like Junior League or Girl Scouts. I mean, the crew that was started by Tiffany Dufu, the Luminary, there's Chief, there's like organizations like your own. I mean, I think organizations that have a mission statement that's aligned to your values, those are things that I've actively explored. So I would encourage people to do that too. I keep tapping my wrist and I realize that I wear my values, which I know, but I realize I'd want to tell people who are also like, how do I build relationships? I think first, be thoughtful around what do you value right now? And be clear and confident how you communicate those. Like, I value faith, community, purpose, and connection. People who know me know that. Like they know that because it's congruent with how I live. And I also talk about them. Like they talk here, we talk about my family, my faith, all those things. So I think being clear about your own values and then seeking out other people who seem to value those same things or appreciate them is another way to be intentional in developing community.
Oh, those are really, really great tips. Thank you so much for that. Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about this book.
Oh, my.
Whatever you want to share with us, right?
Yes.
A little snippet,
I appreciate you, Damara. Okay. So this book is called Soft Landings for Hard Days. And it is my love letter to my generation. And it is specifically, it's written for my daughter and knowing that she will grow up to be a woman who I imagine will be professional in some way, who will work in some way, who will look to have an impact in the world. And those are the same things that I see in my friends and people like you, women like you. And so this book is also written for you, for professional women, specifically women of color who I know and we know deserve soft landings for our hard days. This is my heart's offering to just be with you and to either give you some encouragement or empathy or just space or reflecting back wherever you are to, again, feel less alone in your journey and to feel like you got a little friend in your pocket that you can, you know, pull out at any time to feel accompanied.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I felt all of that, and I am excited about when your book comes out.
Thank you.
Because I have a feeling that it is going to be deeply transformational. I mean, the title and just the fact that you're gifting this first and foremost to your baby, you know, and she will have these words, the world will have these words forever. So thank you. I can't wait. Well, I can't believe we have come to the end, right? I never want these conversations to end, but they always have to. And so I would love for you to share with the audience one last piece of inspiration about how they can fully tap into co-creating an abundant life.
Well, for my friend who's listening, who may be wondering, how do I co-create this abundant life? I first want you to remember that you are already worthy of the life you're living, that you were destined to be and are destined to be something just extraordinary. And that doesn't show up just by what you can produce, but just by who you are. So I encourage you to be gentle with yourself right now. As you explore what new impact you want to have in the world, as you explore new behaviors or new practices you want to invite into your life, do those with intention, do those with love and with compassion. You're beautifully human, which means that there are boundaries to what you could do, but those boundaries are meant to protect you, to allow you to rest, to rejuvenate, to restore what's needed. And so be gentle with yourself as you explore the new that's coming into your life. And just remember, whether that's writing it on your mirror in your bathroom or post-its or journaling, remember you're worthy of this life. You're truly worthy of it. And that you were given permission to do whatever you're called to do the day you were born. So take it and go.
Wow. That's it. That's a drop the mic kind of moment. Jovian, I am really blessed that you said yes to this. I'm so grateful for you. And I am going to be following you and buying this book as soon as it is released. And I imagine that the audience will want to do that and stay in touch with you in all of the ways. So how can they go about doing that? And we'll make sure, of course, that they have all of these juicy links once
our talk. Damara, again, thank you for having me as a part of this moment and your community. I'm honored to be here and just celebrate you, the work you've done, the practice you've put in that's led to this, what, your ninth, like, convening. We celebrate that. We honor that. And we just are excited for more, but also recognize the moment. So congratulations.
Thank you.
And for those of you who would like to stay in touch with me and follow along with my work, you can find me online at Jovian Zane.
Wonderful. Oh my God.
Sign up for the, and also sign up definitely for my new newsletter at jovianzane.com, because you will hear all about the book. You will get early previews and all the good stuff. So yeah.
Oh, good stuff.
See y'all there.
Excellent. So we'll make sure, of course, that folks have that. We'll encourage them to sign up for your e-news. So make sure that you check out this queen, the amazing work. You heard all of this, but this is just a tidbit, really, of all of the reach that she's had in the world. So until next time, beauties, you heard it here at the Global Abundance Summit. And I can't wait to be in community with you all again. Ashe.